Welcome to The Near Memo, a weekly conversation about search, social, and commerce. What happened, why it matters, and the implications for local.
Welcome back to episode 127. That's 127 of The Near Memo with David, Mike, and Greg, where we talk about all things local. Today, we are going to have a dense and accelerated session because we've all got stuff to do right after we record this, and or especially me. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the Google antitrust case. We'll be talking about the duplicate removal submission form that Google recently introduced, and also the phenomenon of multi-click sessions based on our proprietary research. I'm going to lead off with the Google antitrust case, which is starting next week, starts on the 12th, and should be very interesting. There are two issues in the case. One is the position of Google as the default search engine, its sort of pay-to-play relationships with most notably Apple Computer. And the second issue is Search Ads 360. I want to talk about the default search issue, but first, I want to, something I mentioned in the green room before we started is that I took the court's, Google filed a motion for summary judgment, which seeks to eliminate issues from the case. And they won on a number of issues, but the two that I mentioned survive, and that's what will be tried next week. And I took the court's opinion granting Google partial summary judgment. I uploaded it to Claude, which is Anthropic's AI tool. And I said, tell me which of these claims, which of the government's claims survive the motion for summary judgment, right? Which is a fairly abstract thing to say. And
only a lawyer would, ex-lawyer would say it.
Well, right. Making it even sort of more maybe opaque to the AI. But
esoteric.
But the amazing thing is that it got it right. It got it right. It said these claims were eliminated. These claims remain. And I read the opinion myself, so I know it was correct. It was unbelievable to me that it took this, you know, whatever it was, 60 plus 70 page opinion with all kinds of footnotes and redacting and arguments and subsections. And it was able to distill that information from this opinion.
I have a question.
Yes.
So does this mean you're thinking of getting back into law?
No. It's just me being suitably impressed with the capabilities of this device.
Actually, celebrating the fact you're in technology, not law.
Yes, but here's the rare confluence of the two of them, or the not so rare confluence, as the case may be. Okay, so on to the main portion of my discussion. But that was just an incredible thing that I needed to point out. Default search engine on Safari, most prominently, and the Safari browser on mobile. Search Ads 360, not going to talk about that. So what's at stake? So presumably, if the government finds that Google created sort of anti-competitive harm with its relationship with Apple, among others, it will sever that, or it will end that relationship, which has been estimated to, you know, transfer as much as $20 billion a year, $15, $20 billion a year from Google to Apple. So what happens then if that happens? You know, you get a European style choice screen probably when you were setting up your new phone that said, pick a search engine, you know, like a browser choice screen. And ultimately, I don't think there would be any impact at all, zero impact on Google or its market share. Whatever the outcome of this case is, the deal remains intact, or the deal is ended and there's some sort of new system for choosing a search engine on your Safari browser. I don't think Google's market share or usage of Google is affected in any way at all. And in fact, Google would save $15 or $20 billion a year probably.
I was going to say, does Apple get compensated at all if they end up deciding this way?
I don't think so. I think Apple just has to implement a new system. I just think they're SOL, you know, and then the disincentive for them to develop their own search engine might be gone. But I think it's kind of an absurd situation because I don't think as a practical matter, it's going to have any impact on the market at all. Zero. There you go.
So who do you see as the forces behind that particular charge? I mean, do you see this as purely a governmental issue, or do you see other companies as having precipitated this and that charge in particular because they don't like the fact that
Apple's getting
$15 billion?
To give you the short version is that Google's rivals were definitely involved in trying to generate this kind of antitrust case, which is a massive case, or used to be a massive case, which combined the state attorneys general and the DOJ with, there were all kinds of different charges and claims, including Google self-preferencing, which was thrown out kind of amazingly, but still thrown out. So Yelp is in there. Microsoft is probably in there in the background. I mean, there was all kinds of lobbying by private companies in advance of the filing of these cases. I mean, it was years and years and years of wrangling and hearings and all kinds of stuff. So this is the culmination of it. And I think that the outcome is going to be pretty trivial from an impact on Google standpoint. You know, I don't, the ad side, on the SA360 ad side, I have less visibility because I haven't looked at that issue as much.
Yeah. I mean, from my point of view, as a user, I'm quite sure I would continue to use Google because it's no
Everybody
worse
would.
Than anybody else. The question is, what would Apple do? And that's where it starts to get interesting. If they, in fact, you know, they've been gathering user search behavior since the beginning of the Google deal, right? They watch every query before it goes to Google. They know what people are searching for. They deliver the I am lucky response right now. They often will provide even more nuance. So clearly they have in place the data to replace this. The question is, would they, and what would they replace it with?
Well, I mean, I would hope that they would do something interesting, but we'll see. You know, we'll have to wait.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so moving on to you, David. You wanted to discuss Google's duplicate content, or duplicate listings.
Sort of completely unheralded, except for the herald in the right half of your screen here, Mike Blumenthal, a couple weeks ago, or whatever half of the screen is on for you. A couple of weeks ago, Mike published the Monday newsletter, which is an all Google edition from us, and highlighted the fact that there is now a form that you can fill out in the Google Business Profile support forums to attempt to remove or merge duplicate listings. And I was flabbergasted. I thought maybe the calendar had reverted back to April 1st, because this is a feature we've been asking for 15 years since Google's had a product team involved with listings. So I guess never say never, but I'm very excited to try it out. I've not had a chance to yet, but in combination with WhiteSpark's product, which allows you to very easily surface duplicates in Google Maps, given a business name or phone number, I think it could be a really awesome tool in an agency toolbox, regardless of the size of business you serve. I just, working in the industries that I do as a consultant, particularly acute problems in practitioner situations, and especially for enterprise businesses with practices and practitioners. So I'm very, very excited to try this out. Mike, you mentioned in the sort of hot take bullet points that this might be related to some of the sort of transparency regulations introduced in Europe, the amazing meaningless acronyms DSA and P2B. So we'll see the extent to which Google actually follows through, or if this is, as you call it, customer support theater, which I wouldn't put past Google, but at least is a pretty exciting thing to try out. And again, given the combination of tools that are out there from suppliers like WhiteSpark, I'm sure there are other duplicate finders as well. This could be a really just a massive benefit to local SEO practitioners around the globe.
So a couple questions for you, David. Do you see, I mean, I've been dealing with duplicates a little more since I'm in the forum for the last year, and I see certain types of duplicates that have been traditionally very hard to get rid of. For example, you have an SAB with a phone number and a website, and then somehow like the IRS or someplace, Google gets the address data for that SAB. It was impossible for those to merge without extraordinary Google support.
Right.
What types of issues do you typically, what do you think causes the duplicates in healthcare? What kind of duplicates do you see?
I don't know. Certainly on the practitioner front, they must be getting a feed from insurance carriers or even public databases with NPI numbers. And in many cases, the name of the practitioner is just not close enough to what the actual public-facing name of the practitioner. Exactly, right.
They reverse that stuff, or they have all the letters after it, and it doesn't.
Or the address, on their certificate of whatever is sort of the parent address, and the clinic they practice at is far-flung or in a different building or whatever.
And many doctors practice at multiple clinics, so they may be associated with multiple addresses.
Right. And they have, but they also have licensing things that Google uses. They have IRS stuff that Google uses. So Google sources this from a lot of places. And it's always this issue. If it's too different, it's hard to get, it has been hard to get it merged. And it'll be interesting to see whether Google is bringing either better AI or better human intelligence to this problem now that they're actually admitted it's a problem and have provided a resolution.
And it doesn't happen with just providers, though. It also happens with clinics and practice locations in any service category where, again, it's relatively the same issue. If the name from a data, and I'm not singling these guys out, but if the name from Info Group has been truncated to something like SDCS, when the full name of the business is something, something services, like in many cases that will show up as a duplicate, that it's just very hard to get rid of. So
let me interject something for people that may not be SEOs or, you know, longtime followers of this debate. What is the fundamental problem with duplicate listings? Just for anybody who doesn't understand.
You don't know when they're from my standpoint, you don't know when they're going to show up for a brand search. And so you don't know what to be monitoring for reviews. You don't know potentially if the information is wrong, if customers are being directed to the wrong spot. Certainly from a listing equity standpoint, you want to make sure that you're sort of consolidating things to make sure all reviews are going to the same spot, that you're able to track all engagements with that profile. So it's more a question of, you know, A, potentially misleading consumers, even though we as practitioners aren't at fault. It's really a Google problem, Google misleading practitioners, but the consumer obviously doesn't understand that. They feel Google's infallible. So that's the first problem. And then, like I said, the second problem is just the ability to sort of track and understand the engagement with those profiles.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing to me is every time I look, there's a new forum for a new problem that has existed for years. So clearly, Google understood these problems and just never wanted to implement.
Well, they were never motivated motivated to do it. And I think they're compelled by the European rules now it's clearly this DSA and the DMA that are pushing them to do these things. I mean, I think without question, that's what's going on.
Right. And it makes it a whole lot easier. You start there, and then if there's a problem, you escalate it to the forum or whatever, and you can actually get a human to look at it. But so far in the forum, it's when I've sent people to that forum, in most cases, the outcomes have been positive on their behalf. So it appears that Google is actually directing these forms to the right people internally to get them resolved, which is an issue because low-level support at Google is quite lame and they can't do much. So it requires a little higher bit of moxie there. I would love to hear from you how it goes with you.
I will be trying it in the coming week. I can't really say, but in the coming two-week stretch, I will certainly be trying it.
Just keep me in the loop, would you?
Okay, so now, Mike, you wanted to talk about some of the findings from our research and multi-click behavior in particular search sessions. So what's
right.
that about?
So as we've talked about the last few weeks, we've been doing search market opportunity reports, looking at consumer behaviors on Google. And we've been seeing a number of unusual things that we've been reporting on, but one of them that I've thought of a lot over the past. This came up in a desktop survey that we did, I think, of slightly more than 200 consumers looking. We had them look for a lawyer, and they had to figure out
behavioral research.
And they had to figure out what phrases to use. And what we saw was that users considered, on average, at least three results for their each search, I guess it was, right? It was on a per search basis. And yeah. And many of them went on to state that if they were doing it in real life, they'd consider many, many more. So the average of results considered in Google is much higher than SEOs have traditionally sort of thought, and presents much more opportunity than they previously thought, because people are going deeper than we've thought. They're looking at more results, both in the pack and going into the local finder, but also in organic. And it speaks to several things. One, why everything you do has to look good so that you can get the consideration. Two, that there's much more opportunity than we've thought. But I think it also even influences how we analyze keyword research, where it looks like a keyword doesn't generate a lot of results. But if users are exploring 3 or 4 or 5 results based on one keyword search, it means that the opportunity is bigger than SEOs have given credit for. And so we need to, in local particularly, develop techniques to understand when these low volume queries might actually result in higher volume activities. So I really would like to hear David's thought about all this.
Yeah, I think for me, it's all of our research has been good news for the SEO industry. Not that we are necessarily trying to come to that conclusion, but as you said, Mike, in both GBP, pack and finder results, the depth of engagement down the finder, even past, 10 and 15 listings for consumers looking for a compelling GBP profile with their minimum threshold of reviews and ratings, whatever those are. I want the best. Say. We heard a lot of folks say, not enough reviews. I need 5 stars or nothing, that kind of stuff. And so anyway, all I was going to say is that the ranking element actually matters much less than I would have predicted. There was certainly, as we said on the Bright local SEO for Good conference last week, there is clear value in being in the top 3. You do get a major bump from people clicking directly from the pack onto your profile. No question about that. But it's really beyond that top 3. It's really just about getting in the game. So making sure
sort of top 6 or so.
Yeah, top 6, but even like I said, even well down the finder, kind of 8 through 20, we saw people click using the map within the finder in some cases, where it was like we had to sort of correlate where things were in the actual rankings based on the business they clicked on. So just really strong opportunity well down the finder. And the same thing is true in organic, although not quite to that same extent, but sort of a pretty broad click distribution down to about the 6th spot in both legal and medical categories, where, again, you might have thought prior to this research, I certainly would have thought prior to this research, it's kind of a, maybe the first physician gets 50% and 2 and 3 get sort of 20 or 25% and then a pittance for the rest. And that's clearly not the click-through rate curve in local. Yeah,
that's what SEO research has shown in the past, is a real aggressive decline in clicks after the first 2 or 3 at the most. I want to emphasize something that you said, because, and I said this on the local SEO for Good session, because I think it might vary by category a little bit, and it might vary certainly by the competitiveness of the category. What we saw, or what at least I observed personally in medical, where people were going deep into the finder and scrolling, was that they were looking for reviews. They were looking for enough reviews and good enough star ratings to justify their further investigation. And in medical, a lot of doctors don't have any reviews or have very, very limited numbers of reviews. So I think
ironically, probably because a lot of those listings are duplicates that Google's auto-generated that doctors don't know about. So
to bring it all full circle. But I think that in a category where you have a very competitive category where there are a lot of reviews, very high ratings, we don't know this for sure, but you might not see the same depth of engagement down the finder. It's something to be kind of for us to be aware of as we do further research, I think.
I agree. Right. And I would just say one more thing. Just the other piece of our research that I found interesting you know, we've heard a lot about the zero click phenomenon from Rand Fishkin and others. We did see considerable evidence or ammunition for that argument on mobile in particular, where people were just engaging with a GDP profile. It, that click became more disqualifying than qualifying, I would say. So people, if they didn't like what they saw in the Finder listing, they didn't go through the website. They just sort of went back to a different listing. The other piece of this around zero click is we saw a lot of people doing an initial search, reviewing the search results, not liking what they saw, and then refining their query. And that's another zero click search where it's not that people are just staying on Google to be engaged. They're
not getting the information.
Telling Google, you're not showing me the results I want, but it's still not a click through to a website. So a couple interesting nuances there.
Well, I think as Google's, I'm now a big Google critic. And as you know, a critic of the quality of search results. And I think as those, you know, if you see them declining in quality, that phenomenon will be greater, you know, is that people sort of do a search. They don't see at a glance what they want. They don't see a familiar brand or trustworthy brand. They go back, they refine, and eventually they click. So there's a lot of zero click activity because I think people aren't finding, I mean, GBP is a little different because there's enough information there perhaps to make a choice. But in other contexts, I think it's a reflection of dissatisfaction. That would be my speculation. All right. On that note, we are done with another exciting episode, episode 127 of the Near Memo. Tell all your friends about us and give us feedback. You know, we don't get feedback anymore except through GatherUp, which is generally positive, but give us, you know, tell us what you want to hear about. Tell us what you want us to talk about, what you want us to do research on. We'd love to hear your feedback and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining David, Mike, and Greg. To stay on top of the latest developments in local, subscribe to our newsletter at nearmedia.co. We'll see you next week.